Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I'm your host, Preston Schleinkofer. This week, we have part two of our special report with Jonathan Hollerman about his report, Grid Down, Death of a Nation. This information is very stark, very real, and it's scary to some, but it's reality, and we must know what the mentality of people in that type of environment will be like in order to understand how to prepare for it. And so this is part of the abyss that I've spoken of before, and this is the part where government has truly failed to understand where things go in a very severe environment. It's a very severe disaster, and we need to know as citizens on how to prepare for this. So here we go. We'll be talking about starvation, desperation, and the mental aspects of grid down reality. Let's talk about starvation, because you have some research that was listed in your report. That is, it's called the Minnesota Starvation Experiment. Mm-hmm. Can you highlight some of that?
Sure.
For our audience, because this is, I mean, you got pictures in here of these people. I mean, these guys are volunteer military guys who volunteered for this experiment, and they were given a certain diet, and these guys looked like they came out of Auschwitz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it's a very interesting study to read. I think the official report, something like 1,000. I'll be honest, I essentially read the Cliff Notes version of it. But in short, some conscientious objectors during World War II volunteered to, instead of joining the military, you know, even if they didn't support fighting, they wanted to participate somehow. So they participated in this Minnesota starvation experiment. And what they did is they essentially took these men and they half-starved them for I forget how many days. I think it was a couple months, 24 weeks. So what is that? That's 6 months. And over the course of those 24 weeks, these men, I mean, you can see the pictures, they wasted away to essentially nothing. And here's a summary of what the study found. It says a prolonged semi-starvation period, significant increases in depression, hysteria, hypochondriac, as measured by a test of personality, most participants experienced periods of severe emotional distress and depression and grew increasingly irritable. Some individuals engaged in self-mutilation. Apparently one finger cut off three fingers. Many appeared apathetic and lethargic with a diminished sexual interest. Volunteers showed signs of social withdrawal and isolation, and participants reported a decline in concentration, comprehension, and judgment capabilities. So it's a pretty interesting study, and I put it out there to show that if you just look at the pictures, like, man, they starved these guys to death. No. All they did was restrict these men to half rations. These men were given over 1,500 calories per day for 24 weeks. They were given it to them on an exact regimen twice a day. They knew what to expect. There were men in lab coats that inspected them every day and weighed them and poured over them. They had the radio to listen to. They could read magazines. They could basically do whatever they wanted during this 24 weeks period. There was nobody trying to kill them. They didn't have to fear for their wives or children's safety. These are the psychological effects of men that were given half rations. We're talking about a scenario where there's no rations. You get no food. There's nothing to eat. You're eating pine cones out of your backyard, essentially. And I'm joking, but whatever you can find, you're peeling the bark off trees and eating that.
Yeah.
I mean, the psychological effects are going to be twice as bad as what they discussed in this study. And just as a caveat to that, most people in the preparedness industry are buying long-term food plans from all these companies. I'm not going to name names. All the big companies, you know what they are. And they offer the one-year plan or the six-month plan for a family for this or that. On average, I found most of those plans have on average about 800 calories a day, which is half of the half rations these guys are getting.
So they're on quarter rats.
You bought one of those long-term food plans, you need to call the company, find out how many calories of food are in that food plan, figure out your family's actual caloric needs based on a basal metabolic calculator. You're probably going to find out you've got about 40% of the food they sold you. So it's a dirty little secret in the industry, just giving you a heads up. So don't Don't rely on serving sizes when buying long-term food, because you're probably going to look worse than these guys when the time comes if that's your sole source of food.
Well, if we go back to prolonged semi-starvation produced significant increases in depression, hysteria, hypochondria, and periods of severe emotional distress and depression, and grew increasingly irritable. Mm-hmm. Your report doesn't say when that onset was, but, you know, think 4 weeks down the road. You got these people that are running around with less than a quarter of what these guys were given, and these guys experience these serious emotional problems.
In a safe environment.
These other people, I mean, everybody that you see walking around in that type of environment after 4 weeks, they're going to be suffering from all this.
Yep.
And you don't think that they're going to attack just out of sheer craziness?
Yeah.
I mean, this is so enlightening. I mean, people need to really understand this. This is why I want to do this special report, because you highlight some things in here that everybody needs to know and prepare for, because this is some horrific information that changes the paradigm of preparedness.
Well, that was one of the to kind of give a brief. I mean, that's how I got into this. I was a former military SEER instructor. I taught survival, evasion, resistance, and escape. And our job was to take pilots, navigators, and people who flew on a plane sort of draw behind enemy lines and teach them how to survive. They got shot down behind enemy lines for 7 days or 8 days. We took highly trained pilots. We extremely limited their food intake. We limited their sleep. We put them in a stressful environment that they probably weren't normally comfortable with. And
not pilots. They're babied.
Well, not all of them were pilots. I mean, that was probably maybe 30% of our classes. A lot of them were
okay. Air crew, yeah, okay.
Air crew and I mean, even special operations guys. So,
right.
I didn't have a single class of people students that I carried that I didn't have a single person in the group break down bawling on the ground. Full grown man, you know. Come on, Lieutenant, you know, pick them up off the ground. You got to keep, you know, we got to push forward. It was just watching the psychological aspects, just 6 or 7 days with minimal food. Just how, I mean, lethargic. By the end of 8 day, we used to joke about like the million mile stares the students would have. Just, I mean, you'd have to tell them something 5 times to get it through their head, because they're just, and the thing is I was there. So in my training to become a SEER instructor was far worse than anything we ever put our students through. Our first training was 28 days in the mountains of Washington State, with 6 feet of snow on the ground and not a cattail or piece of green anything to be found. And for my group of 8 guys, they gave us a box full of vegetables and a goat for.
Yeah, you got a picture of that on page 15.
Yeah. I mean, I lost 15 pounds. I mean, I was in a peak physical condition, a specimen of humankind at that point, entering it. I lost 15 pounds that I didn't have to lose at that point. By the time we made it back, I tell a story in there of just all you could think about towards the end of training. Literally nothing else mattered but food. That's all we talked about. We took notes on it. We compared notes. We joked about it. We laughed about it. We argued about it. All we talked about by the end of that trip was food. And that's in an environment, it's a training environment. We know we're going to get back to the base in 4 days, 3 days, 2 days. We knew when we were heading back. In this scenario,
right.
I mean, the people have no clue. There's no radio. There's no TV. There's no information coming across the waves to tell them what's going on. And if it does come across the waves, it's probably going to be misinformation. Just telling, oh, yeah, we got this covered. You know, hang tight. Because they're going to try and quell the panic as long as possible. But anyway, so that's my background. And what I did is I started reading a lot of this other fiction from some of these authors and stories on this scenario, on a grid down scenario. And I'm just like, man, they just don't, they have no, they've never, almost all these authors are Americans and they've grown up in the richest country in the world. They've never been on a mission trip with their church overseas or seen true starvation, seen true desperation, seen any of this stuff. So that's the reason I wrote my first book, to kind of counter some of those ideas. And I really became a student of these subjects. Philip Zimbardo is a world-renowned psychologist, did the 1970 Stanford experiment. You know, I read his work. He's got a great book called The Lucifer Effect on this subject. It's a little deep, but there's a lot of people that have covered this. You look at things that happened during the Holocaust, and there's a lot of writing. If you go back and you look at history and you look at some of these authors that really cover this subject, you get a totally different picture than a lot of the people today are painting on this scenario. So, and I realize from the military and government standpoint, they don't want to scare people. They don't want to fearmonger. But I'm the opposite side. They're not getting anywhere. They're not getting the grid hardened. None of the politicians are biting on this. No one's moving on this. So in my opinion, your next step is you need to kind of wake people up and tell them the truth. Paint them an accurate picture of what living without rule of law, starvation, human desperation will do to a society. And hopefully, if we can wake enough people up, they can pressure Congress to act.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important. And it's important for our listeners to get involved in this initiative to wake people up. Not only do we need to wake up our family and friends and neighbors, but we also need to wake up politicians. And I would suggest sending a letter to politicians, your local and state and federal, with links to these reports that I'm going to have in the show notes, and tell them, you know, hey, look at this stuff. It's serious. So so the last portion of this is the living without rule of law. Mm-hmm. That's something that you know, Mad Max, Thunderdome, things like that. But it's really worse than that, though, isn't it?
It is. I think, and people chuckle when I say this, but Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome is probably fairly accurate. I know it sounds, you tell people that and they just like, they're like, you're crazy. Like, you live in sci-fi land. And I mean, yeah, I'm not. Go back and read. I give a whole bunch of list of books in here. The Rape of Nanking by Iris Chan, Survival of Auschwitz by Primo Levi, Ordinary Men, Reserve Battalion 101 by Chris Browning. There's a lot of books that talk about living without rule of law and some of these different atrocities throughout history and what things look like. Man, your eyes will be so open to the human condition and what mankind is capable of doing to one another. There's various different psychological reports that you can infer certain things. I talk about some of them. The Milgram experiment, the famous experiment where they did a casting call and they had people come in and shock people or thought they were shocking people on a machine under direction. And psychologists thought, oh, only like 2% of people will actually go all the way in this experiment. And they were wrong. It was almost all of them went all the way. So there's human nature. Just again, there's a big misunderstanding of what mankind is capable of. And we're living without rule of law. So we've always had rule of law in this country, always have rule of law in this country. Doesn't matter if you go back to the Civil War or where, how far you go back, there was somebody that kept order. Now you might've been on the frontier, you know, real far away from the fringes, but there was a semblance of order if you chose to live under it. So what we're looking at here is the human condition. Okay, that affects everybody. That affects doctors. That affects policemen. That affects first aid and FEMA workers. That affects government. And that affects military members. So there's this common idea that somehow first responders, military and government and doctors, they're above the fray and they're just going to stay at their post till the end of days and just keep doing their job. It's just not going to happen. I mean, you might get those professionals to stay at their post for a certain period of time, but when things really start falling apart, week in, 10 days in, 2 weeks tops, you're not going to be able to find a doctor. You're not going to find a policeman. They're all people. And that's not denigrating any of these people. They're humans. They have families. They have mothers, fathers, girlfriends, boyfriends, children, wives, they've got, you know, sick brother-in-laws. I mean, there's a human factor here that these plans always forget about, is that these people that are supposed to be doing X job or Y job or part of your organization, they're going to go home. at some point, especially if you're not feeding them, right? If you're not supplying food and protection and water to them and their family, you're not going to maintain right. any of your the people in your organization, none of them. And so
yes.
It's just a matter of time till these places go away. A couple of the big revelations I talked about earlier at the EDTF committee, most people aren't aware that 99% of the U.S. military is completely reliant on the civilian electric grid. Okay, I knew that from reading reports before going into this. Upon getting there, most bases have a few hours to 48 hours, like 2 days tops, of backup diesel generation to run their bases. Okay, So most people think that the military is going to, you know, like the Hollywood books, they're going to come down, they're going to solve martial law, and they're going to, you know, the military is going to take care of the problem to keep the rioting and looting down. No. Here's the next big thing that I didn't know, is that if we're hit by an EMP, the military base's communications is over the civilian phone line. That's fried too. So literally, each base commander is going to be sitting there twiddling their thumbs with no way to have any clue what's going on at a command level, command and control. So, I mean, NORAD, Cheyenne Mountain, that stuff's protected, but there's no way to get information to each of the base commanders. They're talking about, you know, you have to wait for, like, I forget how long, like a week or something, to the gamma rays in the atmosphere settle down. But they're talking about launching, like, communication satellites after the fact. I mean, the foreign country is just going to hit you with another one probably a week later or 2 weeks later. So you're at a essential that there's no game plan for this. There's no marching orders for the base commanders at this point, any of them. There's no plan of action for this. Each one of them is going to be winging it, let's put it that way. And there's no food on base to feed their troops, but they've got a lot of guns and ammunition. So, I'm curious to see where that goes. If you've read any of my books, you know that I always paint the military in positive light, being prior military myself. I mean, a lot of the preparedness fiction, it's like, oh, the government man's going to come for your gun, and, you know, the military's going to come down there and try and confiscate guns from some rancher in Wyoming. That's just stupid. That's never going to happen. It's just not going to happen. The military's not, there's not going to be a lot of order to begin with. And the pockets that do remain, I believe most of them are probably going to be moral, right? And the commanders are going to try and help people the best they can and help their troops and help their communities the best they can. And hopefully they can maintain order for a certain amount of time. But if you can't feed your troops, you know, Carl's going to go home to check on mom and dad. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It happened in Katrina. That's why the call went out for assistance from all over the country. And our SRT team went there, and I almost went there, except my supervisor says, I'm not going to help you go have a reunion with your son, you know, because he was in the Army Guard and he got sent there from Oregon. And so I was in Texas, and, you know, it would have been nice to see him, but my boss was just being a tool and said no. But
well, one other caveat, you know, one thing that's not in this report on the same subject was one of the generals that were at this, one of the old generals, the retired generals, he was talking about the situation. And I don't remember what base, I think it was like Minot, it was some really cold base up in North Dakota or South Dakota or somewhere up there. And he was talking about how, like 40 years, I mean, you can never get away with this today, but like 40 years ago, he turned the electricity off at base housing one night just to see what would happen. Okay. And all the, you know, naturally the wives and the, you know, the people at home at these houses kind of freaked out. They were all calling their husbands. I forget what percentage he said, but a large portion of his troops basically just left their posts and went home to base housing to check on their wives and kids. And he was like, and that was his test that he did. And he basically reaffirmed what I was kind of saying, is that, like, you know, we have to plan for these kind of eventualities. I mean, they're just humans. You know, the military's really good at moving chess pieces around the board, and, you know, we all joke at how you're just a number when you join the military, but in a sense, it's kind of the way that it's looked at, and they kind of lose the mentality that these are just humans. And, you know, moving on to the military side of it, after, you know, I discussed these three things, you know, I don't know if you're going to go there, some of the military exercise and some examples, but I mean, desertion is going to be a very serious problem for the military. So they're all making these plans, expecting their chess pieces to be actually be on the board to formulate and to complete the plan they're putting in, they're trying to put in place. But I don't foresee, I think a lot of the chess pieces are going to be missing when you bust the board out to play the game.
Yeah. Well, there was a military installation for Bragg, I think it was, maybe Benning, that had a simulated EMP attack, and they shut off stuff for 24 hours. And
I think it was like 12.
All hell broke loose.
I think it was
12 hours. Yeah. Just, 12 hours.
Was,
yeah.
And it was in the middle of the night. Like most of the people slept through it. So it didn't really even affect anybody a whole lot.
But there's lawsuits and
people were dragged to the ring.
Looking for.
Can you imagine the Army issuing an official apology for running a test at their base for saying, hey, we're going to run this test, see what happens? You're right. There's lawsuits and like, something. It's like you're in the military on an on base housing. They would turn the lights off for you at 8 hours in the middle of the night to see your reaction.
And this was a base This is a base that's responsible for rapid deployment forces, and they failed. So it gives you an idea, you know. I'm retired Army, so you know I can throw a little bit of stuff at my brothers out there. These guys are tip of the spear combat troops, and you know, airborne all the way, and their command failed.
Yeah, well, I'm
because
I'm terrified
they didn't have their people planned.
The same thing in any other branch, no matter.
Oh yeah,
Air Force,
yeah.
It would have been the same thing because again, it's a humanity factor. I mean, the military leadership sometimes they just forget that you're dealing with humans. We're not machines. I mean, you can break us down and mold us into machines in basic training and through tech school, but at some point, you have to figure in the human aspect too.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to wind down here. So if you want to give us any final thoughts, go ahead and do so.
Well, I would say pay attention to the Iran and North Korea side of things. Things are heating up with Iran, and a lot of people just have no concept or no clue that Iran is the fourth largest cyber army in the world. If you read some of last year's, the reports that were released last summer from the EMP commission, this one called Foreign Views on EMP Attack Scenarios by Dr. Pry and the chairman's report, it goes straight into, they discuss foreign military writings from Iran, North Korea, China, Russia, and some of these countries. And almost every country today, their first strike is going to be a prolonged blockout of their enemy, whether by cyber attack or EMP. It's a fact. Accept the fact that we're not kind of real quick, going back to the EDTF conference I went to, the war gaming down at Maxwell Air Force Base. A lot of these, not the ones at the conference, but it seems like a lot of our generals and a lot of our military today, I mean, they are so, they're stuck in last century mindsets of, hey, we need to build a bigger, faster airplane, a more top secret aircraft carrier, submarine, bigger tanks, more hardened, more technological vehicles to replace the Hummer. I mean, everything they're doing, and they're missing that the foreign writings, these other governments, they are hardening their electric grid. They are preparing for an electromagnetic war. On electromagnetic spectrum, cyber and EMP. That is what all the other countries are moving to the 21st century warfare. And a lot of our military generals are just stuck in this old mindset of, you know, kind of like
force on force.
Like the old war where the English lined up in rows to fight the frontiermen. I mean, they're kind of in this. We're losing ground here, and we still have the best military and the best troops and the best leadership and weapons and stuff to a degree, but we have to transition our thought process on how to fight this. And unfortunately, that's not happening at a, it's happening on a micro level in the military, but not a macro level. So there's just a lot of misunderstanding. I hope this report, I was asked by the EDTF to write this report. It's linked to the this 2019 EDTF report. And I also lay out my recommendations to the military from the report on, you know, what I would recommend that they do in this scenario. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen. Unfortunately, shortly after this happened, shortly after the report was laid out, General Quast, who put this whole thing together, brought all these organizations together under one room to discuss a very real and viable threat to the United States. You know, this is only the second year of having this, and he was basically forced into retirement. So there are powers that be that, I don't know. So just there's still a swamp out there. It has not been drained.
Oh, yeah.
Just because Trump was elected. If Trump is your guy, you know, he's in it. There's still a big swamp there, and we're fighting an uphill battle. I hope and I pray to God that somebody, you know, somehow we get the word out and the American people rise up, say enough is enough, and the electric grid gets hardened. I don't foresee that happening in the near future. My philosophy is you need to prepare for hard times, hope for the best, let God do the rest, but you need to have a plan of action to get out of mass population centers. You need to have a plan of action to feed your family. How are you going to react in this scenario? Read my report. Look, you know, wrap your brain around these horrific things and, you know, come up with a plan of action. It may not be the best plan of action. It may have a lot of holes in it, but at least be prepared if this happens and press forward.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's plan A, plan B, plan C. Mm-hmm. And plan A is civil defense, because there's a lot of natural hazards out there that we experience. And to be resilient in your community, you need to have a prepared family, neighborhood, and community. So civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with a guide found on our resources page at our website at civildefenseradio.com, and be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio, where we post information about the threats that we see. I wish to thank Jonathan again for being on our show, and our friends who listen to us regularly. I appreciate you being with us this week. So please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.